Hey, let's give it up one more time for Brad and the band. That was awesome. Man, that was awesome. Well, hey, so we've been in this brand new series, like Mark said, called Spark, Igniting the 167. And here's the thing. We recognize that outside of this 1 hour maybe you spend with us, whether it's here in the venue, joining us online, you've got 167 hours a week. And so we want to ignite some change. We want to ignite some life. We want to help create some healthy rhythms. And so my name is Chris. I'm the campus pastor of a brand new campus that is launching this Christmas Eve, actually, over in Westfield. This Christmas Eve. Mark, isn't that awesome? And Mark is right. The last time I saw confetti on this stage, we had a trophy in our hands, which was pretty awesome. Game Day 2021. If you missed it, you can find all of our content online. Go to crosswindweb.org/watch, and you can find every single weekend that we've done over the last year, 15 years, it feels like. And so glad you're joining us here tonight. And you know, and we're talking about rhythms, and we're talking about healthy rhythms. We're talking about having some fun and some play. And here's something that we recognize, is that every single recreational activity, every single one, it has rhythm to it, right? I mean, let's think about basketball. You know, when a shooter gets into a rhythm, and it's like, you know, this guy's not going to miss, right? He gets into the groove, and it's like every single time, Steph, like, he's not going to miss. You know it. You've seen it. It's a groove, right? It's a rhythm. And so it's kind of got a little backswing and a little smooth follow through. And if you're watching online, maybe you're a golf pro. Don't send me any emails. Don't judge my swing. I played soccer in college. I don't know what I'm doing. But here's the other thing. You know, we look at football, right? You guys remember when Peyton and Reggie and Marvin and, ooh, I'm trying to hit the camera. You remember when they got in rhythm? You know, the broadcasters that said, man, these guys are in rhythm today, right? Like, they were feeling it. They were together. They were in the moment together. Or maybe talk about running. And I'm not much of a runner myself, but I hear that when you're running, you kind of hit your stride, and you've just got this perfect little whoo that came right at somebody. You know, we're going to have some fun today. We're going to play a little bit. Keep your head on a swivel, all right? But when you're running, like, you get into your stride, you get into your rhythm, or maybe on a bike. I've got an 18-month-old daughter. You know, she's got one of those little pedal things that she's trying to figure out how to get the rhythm. How does she stay afloat on that thing? But when you're riding a bike, you get the rhythm, you get moving, and let's see if I can get a little air up on this one. Oh, at the TV in the back. I hit it earlier, too. They got mad at me, but what are you going to do? Or maybe golf. Anybody watch the Travelers Championship last weekend? Anybody? Eight playoff holes. This is the most playoff holes ever. And what I understand about golf is not much, but what I do understand is there's a rhythm to it, right? You've got to get the right backswing, and there's something about a plane, somebody was telling me one time, but it's all about this nice, smooth, consistent follow through, and I don't have it. But there's a rhythm to it. There's a rhythm to everything that has a little recreational activity to it. And what I've noticed, though, what I've begun to notice, and maybe you've noticed this too, is that even golf has become hurried. Anybody gone golfing recently? And just feel like there's a million people following you, and you feel like you've got to rush through your swings because, you know, there's 10 people on the tee box behind you. I mean, golf has become hurried. What used to be, you know, 4, 5, 6 hours out on the course on a nice, slow Saturday has now become something that people like to call speed golf. And if you don't know anything about speed golf, I want you to check this out.
Go in.
Yes!
Yeah, baby. There's something you never see in normal golf, is standing over the hole watching the ball go in.
I love it. Oh, man. This is burning.
Think about this, you'll be done with 9 holes. You have the whole day in front of you.
Yeah.
How you feeling?
So the guy in this video, not the one running, but the coach alongside of him that's talking to him, he is the world speed golf record holder. This course that he plays at, he shot a 66 in 45 minutes. 45 minutes. That's 18 holes. That takes me, I'm golfing this weekend, that's going to take me 5 hours with a cart. I mean, I'm a terrible golfer. This guy is a world record holder, but why does it seem like everything's got to be in a hurry? Why can't we go out on a Saturday, on a Friday, and just relax, take some time? And what we're finding is that life in general is the same way. There are times to work, there are times to play, and there are times to rest. And we function at our peak performance
when we have rhythm, when we take the appropriate time to both work and play and rest, to take time, maybe take an entire day to change it up, or maybe do what the Jewish, the Hebrew people would call a Sabbath, take a moment to rest. And so today, I want to take a look at how play and rest can fit into these healthy rhythms and how they can ignite a spark that will change the rest of your week outside of here. Before we do that, I want to pray for you guys. Let's pray. God, thank you for today. As we think about rhythm today, God, I want to thank you for giving us some moments to pause, some moments to recognize that even you took a day to breathe. And we see it in your creation narrative, 6 days of work, 1 day of rest. God, help us today to recognize the incredible amount of health that can come into our lives. Lord, the life change that we can begin to see when we take hold of rhythms of rest and rhythms of play. It's in your name, Jesus. Amen. So over the last year and a half of being a parent, I've gotten to experience something that if you're a parent, maybe your aunt, uncle, grandparent, you've seen this yourself. It's this experience of the joy that comes when we play. My daughter, Colin, she's about 18 months old, and something that I know about her more than anything is that girl knows how to play. I mean, from the moment she wakes up to the moment that she takes a few last sprint laps around the loft, that girl is always ready to play. And currently, one of our favorite ways to play is on Saturdays. We head over to Spencer Farms, and if you haven't been there, it's really fun, tons of fun. And we pick berries. And this was Colin's, actually, just this last weekend. And I don't know if she's ever been happier than when she was able to pick a raspberry off of the bush, put it in her basket, and then she would take off running a little bit ahead of us, sit down, and then just start digging in. And we were like, no, just, what, you can't stop her. I mean, look at her. She's so happy. She's just one after another. And this moment of play has reminded me that when it comes to play, kids have it. I mean, they don't even have to think about it. It's natural to her. But it begs the question, when did I lose it? When did you lose it? If you've got your Bible with you, maybe you've got it on your phone, we're going to jump into this story in Luke 10, and maybe you're joining us online. It's going to be right there on the screen next to you. But as we think about our rhythms, as we think about healthy rhythms and recreating or maybe beginning to see the health that can come when we slow down, when we rest, when we pause, I want you to know that God actually builds play into our daily routine. A time to play, a time to recreate. And the idea here is for us to enjoy time with those that make life good. And so today we're going to check out this interaction with Jesus. And when we read this, it might hit a little close to home for some of you. It might hit a little closer for some of you who have a hard time getting out of this productivity mindset. It might be hard for some of you if maybe you just remember your mom or your grandmother always going, 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 doing, 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 and you've just picked it up, and that's just the way that you were raised, and you were always feeling like you had to be productive. You couldn't pause. You couldn't rest. You couldn't just sit and play. You had work to do. And so we're going to check out this story. This is from Luke 10, and check out what it says. It says, as Jesus and his disciples were on their way, he came to a village where a woman named Martha opened her home to him. She had a sister called Mary who sat at the Lord's feet listening to what he said. But Martha was distracted by all of the preparations that had to be made. And she came to him and she said, Lord, don't you care? Don't you care that my sister has left me to do all of this work by myself? Tell her to help me. And Jesus, he says, Martha, Martha, you're worried and you're upset about many things, but few of those things are needed. Or indeed, only one, and Mary has chosen what is better, and it won't be taken away from her. You see, we see Jesus in this moment, in essence, saying, there's more to life than work. There's time to rest. There's time to recline, to sit at a table with some friends and share a meal and laugh and spend time together. And he's saying, Mary's chosen what is better, and it won't be taken away from her. Jesus is like, look, Martha, it's not go, go, go all the time. Martha, there's time to slow down. There's time to connect with others, to recreate. And I'm sure you're sitting there thinking, like, I get it. I get Martha. Like, I understand Martha. I've been there. I am Martha. I'm Martha at times. I mean, there's things to be done. There's productivity that needs to be happened. I mean, the dishwasher needs to be unloaded. All these things need to happen. But what Jesus is reminding us in this story is there's also moments to rest, to be still, to play, to share a meal, to laugh with friends. And it makes me wonder, right? Because I look at Martha in this story, and maybe you look at Martha in this story, you start to feel like, well, I kind of get her. I don't really understand Mary. That's not me. I'm more of Martha. And it makes me wonder, why does it feel like we're just always in a hurry? You see, life seems to be going faster and faster and faster. I mean, the speed golf, like, whoever thought that we're going to run 18 holes in 45 minutes? That sounds miserable, but that seems to be our life. I mean, where does it end? And there's this guy by the name of Buckminster Fuller, and first off, great name, Buckminster Fuller, here he is. But this is an architect who invented the geodesic dome. I mean, you know, can you picture Epcot? I mean, he's the guy who created that type of building. But later on in his life, he became a futurist and a systems theorist, and he wrote this book called Critical Path, The Critical Path, and he came up with something that's called the knowledge doubling curve. And I want you to hang with me because this is going to be really, really important as we go on. It's going to sound like maybe it's up here. I don't know. Maybe you got a PhD and you already know what I'm talking about. I don't know where you're at. I didn't do very well in school, I'll be honest with you. So I had to think about this a couple times. But he calls this the knowledge doubling curve. He estimates that you could take the cumulative knowledge of the entire world, of all of human civilization from the year of Jesus' birth, that if you took all of it, that it would double in about 1,500 years. All the knowledge, 1,500 years, and it would double. And then from there, it would double again at about 250 years. So it took 1,500 years, and then it's going to double again in just 215 years. So they were in 1750. And then from there, it began to double every 100 years until we got to about World War II. And then it started to go at breakneck speeds. After the war, it began to double every 25 years. The cumulative knowledge of the entire world doubled every 25 years up until about the 80s. And then that 25 years became about 12 months. 12 months. It took us 1,500 years to double. And in the 80s, it came about 12 months. But some current estimates actually put that number right now in 2021 to be about every 12 hours. Every 12 hours. And so if you were born the same year as Jesus, it would be a millennium and a half for the cumulative knowledge of the entire world to double. But if you were born today, it would be from the time that you woke up and ate breakfast to the time that you went to bed, which is how we became to know, be known to be living within this information age, right? I mean, you've heard this before. And yet, while we have more information than ever before, we don't seem to actually be living a whole lot better. In fact, many of us, we feel more anxious, we feel more scattered, we feel more distracted than even just a few years ago. A book that I read in the last year, it actually spoke about this very idea and how it seems that this hurry has just become a normal part of life. Check out what author John Mark Comer says. He says this. He says, hurry is the greatest enemy of spiritual life in our day. You must ruthlessly eliminate hurry from your life. Now, I'm not sure where you live, whether it's here on the north side of the city or maybe you're joining us from somewhere, anywhere around the globe, but as I read this and the longer that I live, the more convinced I am that he's right, that hurry really is the issue underneath all of the other issues. It's the root cause beneath so much of the anger, so much of the anxiety in our culture. And followers of Jesus, if you consider yourself to be a follower of Jesus, you're not immune to this. You're not immune to culture's pain. And many of us, we live with this fatigue and this chronic anxiety because we're living our lives at breakneck speed and we wonder, where is God in the midst of all of this? The reality is this, that most of us are just too busy to live an emotionally healthy and spiritually vibrant life. We're too busy. The reality is hurry is incompatible with the way of Jesus. The love, the joy, the peace that formed the DNA, that formed the nucleus of Jesus' mission in life, of Jesus' kingdom. They are all impossible in a life that's filled with speed. And so we must, as Comer says, we must ruthlessly eliminate hurry. And in order for us to truly get a picture of this, I want us to check out this picture of the Jewish or the Hebrew understanding of what a day was supposed to look like. You see, their days were modeled after God's rhythm of creation. And so the Jewish, or maybe the Hebrew day planner, you know, the mud house Sabbath, if you want to check it out, you can begin to see this. But this is what a day looked like from a Hebrew perspective. So you had 12 hours of work. You know, 6 a.m. you begin your work, and you have 12 hours to work. And this is all of your job. This is all of the activity, all the motion that you have outside of your job. So this is the yard work. This is the shuttling kids back and forth to school. This is, you know, getting in a workout before the end of the day. I mean, this is all of these things in this 12 hours, 6 a.m. to 6 p.m. But by the time the sun is going down, your work, your activities to begin to stop. And then you begin this moment of rest. And this is where relationships begin to fit in. This is where rest and play and reconnection and laughter can fit right in. And so God, He designed this time of reconnecting, this play from the very beginning. It's the beginning of recreation. You know, notice the root word of recreate. It's about refreshing, renewing, things that you enjoy, things that bring life to your soul, things that revive you. And I think the single most effective place that we can begin to put this back into our rhythm is at the dinner table. And the problem is, though, that our pace of life, it just doesn't match. Doesn't match that. Eric Schlosser, he's this author who writes this book, Fast Food Nation. If you haven't checked it out, it's a good book. But he writes this book, and he says that any given day, about one quarter of the U.S. adult population eats a fast food meal. Every day, about one quarter of the population. And a generation ago, three quarters of the money that was spent on food was spent at a grocery store to prepare at home. But today, that number has flip-flopped. Today, the money that is used to buy food, it's mainly spent at restaurants today, and most of those being fast food restaurants. And so for our family, some of the best times of the day, they're at dinner. And so for us, this is where we've had to put a line in the sand and say, we've got to eat dinner together. And we were never perfect at this. Before we had a child, man, we'd park ourselves on the couch. We'd pull up the table, you know, the table right there in front of us. We'd sit there. We'd watch The Office. We'd watch Friends. We would not talk. We would just enjoy a little meal, a little bit of TV. But today, we've had to sit at the table. And it's where we laugh. It's where we connect. It's where we enjoy each other. It's where, and don't get me wrong, man, it's not easy feeding a toddler. I mean, most of the food, it kind of looks like this, not quite honestly. I mean, most of the food ends up right here or in my dog, my French bulldog's mouth, that he's sitting right there and he's kind of waiting for her to drop everything. I mean, the two of them are kind of like a tag team duo. I mean, it's difficult, but we laugh. We talk. We engage each other. And again, it's not something we've always been perfect at. And again, I get it. I don't know your family dynamics. I don't know your relationships. I don't know what kid has what. And I understand that this is a difficult thing. But these times together at the table are worth it. This guy named Jacques Pepin, he's a former chef for Oprah. And he actually writes specifically about this. Check out what he says. He says, the dinner table should be the stage where you talk at the end of the day. That the conversation, it may not always be pleasant. Maybe you're in an argument about what happened that day at school, but it is a very necessary thing that brings the family together. Which brings me to this. If we want to reclaim this rhythm of rest, this rhythm of play, it can begin by reclaiming the dinner table. Now, we're going to jump ahead a bit here. I want us to move forward into another aspect of this rest and play that we're digging in together. And now, when someone asks you a question, when someone asks you, hey, how are you doing? How are you doing? How's your life going? You know, what's going on in your family? If you're anything like me, your answer is probably, man, we're busy. We're busy. Life is great, man, but things are busy. We're always running. Things are hectic. Our schedule's busy. But then it's pretty quickly followed up by, but everyone's busy, right? I mean, you get it. You guys are busy too, I'm sure. I mean, what we really mean when we're saying that is that there are so many demands on our lives, but we get to choose how we deal with them. And this is where we find Jesus in the midst of it. So many demands on his life. But we get to see how he chooses to deal with those demands. How he meets those demands. You see, he knew what it meant to have people that needed him. For there to always be this unfinished business. This moment of productivity that he could continue to work towards. Check out what happens here. This is Mark 1. Check this out. As soon as they left the synagogue, they went with James and John to the home of Simon and Andrew. And Simon's mother-in-law was in bed with a fever, and they immediately told Jesus about her. And so what did Jesus do? Somebody needed him. And so he went to her, and he took her hand, and he helped her up. And the fever had immediately left her, and she began to wait on them. And that evening after sunset, the people, they brought to Jesus all of the sick and the demon-possessed, and the whole town gathered at the door. And Jesus, he healed many who had various diseases, and he drove out many demons, but he would not let the demons speak because they knew who he was. And then, very early in the next morning, while it was still dark, Jesus, he got up, and he left the house, and he went off to a solitary place where he prayed. And Simon and his companions, they went to look for him. And when they found him, they're like, Jesus, everyone's looking for you, man. What are you doing? Everyone is looking for you. And Jesus, he replies to him. He says, let's go somewhere else, to the nearby villages, so that I can preach there also. That is why I've come. And so we see this whole town. They're gathering outside the door where they know Jesus is, waiting for their opportunity to plug into him. Waiting for their opportunity to receive from him. Waiting for their opportunity to take from him, to get their needs met by him. And you notice what Jesus does. He does it. He meets their needs. And then he leaves. And he goes to a solitary place to rest, to pray. You see, Jesus, he gets away. Because Jesus understood that if you live at this pace all of the time, that eventually you're going to burn out. You're going to fry up. You're going to be miserable. You're going to feel like you're brain dead just walking through the day. And his disciples, they're like, Jesus, look, what about all these people, man? What do you want us to tell all of these people? But Jesus says, let's go rest. He needed to disengage. And so he slid away to participate in something that allowed him to reconnect with himself, to reconnect with his Father. To renew, to revive his soul. And it's important for us to understand that the kind of things that renew us. Maybe you're like Jesus in this moment. Maybe you're like Jesus in this story. Maybe you just need some solitary time. Maybe you're the mom that just needs a minute to herself at the end of the night. Maybe you're like me. Maybe you get restored when you're surrounded by people, when you're engaging with other people, when you're interacting, when you're laughing, when you're sharing stories. It's so important for us to understand the kind of things that renew us, that refresh our souls. And Jesus, he understood that the heavy engagement of work, it required some recreating time. And for him, it was being alone. And he began to teach his friends, his disciples, to do just the same. And all throughout Scripture, we see this done. All throughout Scripture, we see Jesus do this over and over and over again. He would meet people's needs. He would spend time healing. He would spend time teaching. And then he would get up. And he would walk away. And he would spend some time with the Father. He would spend some time solitary, spending just some few moments. Whenever Jesus was heavily engaged, it was almost immediately followed by some downtime. You see, Jesus, he had these rhythms that he lived by. And so we see and we feel that we have this need to reconnect, this need to recreate at the end of a very busy day, at the end of a day full of heavy engagement. But when we don't do this, when we don't do what Jesus does in these moments, it violates our design. It violates our makeup. Not only do we feel the abuse physically, but we begin to feel it in our souls. And little by little, our zest for life diminishes. Our effectiveness goes down. And it goes back to what we talked about earlier. You see, the reality is most of us, we're just too busy to live an emotionally healthy and vibrant spiritual life. Because the reality of it is this, that hurry is, it's incompatible with the way of Jesus. The love, the joy, the peace that form the DNA, the nucleus of what it means to be a follower of Jesus, it requires rhythm. It requires pace. It requires us to slow down. And so as John Mark Comer says, he says it requires us to ruthlessly eliminate hurry from our life. And so what do you need to do? What do you need to do to reclaim some rhythm in your life, to begin to play again, to create rest, to create opportunities for you to get away? Here are a few just next steps you can just begin to do right now. I mean, you've got 167 hours when you leave this place that you can begin to implement these next steps. And I believe that when you do, that the intentionality of these rhythms will begin to change your life. The first one is this. Maybe you're just going to say, I will say yes to play this week. These are on your connection card if you want to look at it and jump in. I want to encourage you. Say yes to play this week. Think back to the last year of your life. Have you taken moments to say yes to play? And your life, it's going to look different when you do. It's going to look much better when you do. And you might not have a toddler at home. You might not have, you know, 12 solid hours of play a day like I have the opportunity for. But you have opportunities to play. Every single one of us, wherever you find yourself on the spectrum, has a chance to play. So I want you to say yes to it. Because studies have shown that when you're a part of a fun, loving environment, it leads to more creativity. It leads to more humor. And humor, it brings down the temperature of a room. It allows you to be the thermostat and not just the thermometer. You get to set the tone of a room when you're feeling this fun, loving, creative environment. And play these fun, loving environments, it leads to more productivity. You'll get more done. I mean, studies show that when you're in a fun-loving environment, that you'll begin to perform better on tests, that your tasks will begin to be done better, your projects will get done faster. I mean, it leads to productivity, that a fun-loving environment, it creates maturity. And a great part of maturity is having the ability to play, that you can be childlike without being childish. And so maybe ask yourself this week, how could I look at this project through the eyes of a child? All right, next one. If you've got your connection card, this is the second one on there. I will give myself permission to rest and begin to work towards ruthlessly eliminating hurry from my life. Maybe ask yourself this question this week. What activity restores my soul? What is it that restores you? What hobbies, what activities, what kind of play energizes you? Maybe this is your next step, to grab a copy of John Mark Comer's book. It's called The Ruthless Elimination of Hurry. This is one of the best books I've read in the last probably 5 years. Incredible book. Completely reshaped the way that my wife and I look at our schedule. Highly encourage it. Maybe this is your next step. Grab one of these books. Or maybe your next step this week is to begin to reclaim the dinner table for your family. And this one's going to require some adjustments. This one's going to require you to sit down with your spouse or the people you live with and look at your calendars and begin to reshape what it looks like. And it's one that's going to take some time to figure out. It's going to be a rhythm that you're going to have to establish. But I can tell you that it's worth it every time. Does your family, do you spend time reconnecting over the dinner table? Or is your eating just a means to getting fed? And if you're single, maybe you're not living with family, do you spend that first block of play of that recreating time on the calendar? Do you spend it with those that are life-giving to you? If not, I encourage you to do it. And lastly, for some of us, maybe one of the most spiritual things that you could do this week is to spend some time doing something that you love. What is something that you love? Have you done it lately? If you're married, if you have kids, one of the best things you could do is encourage your child, encourage your spouse to do the same thing, to spend some time that brings life to their soul. And I can tell you that for our family, one of those ways that we've established this rhythm of rest, this rhythm of play is through this weekly Sabbath we begin to do. And if you hear the word Sabbath, you start to think traditional, you know, these hard, fast rules, but it's anything like that. I mean, in our house, it's simply a day to pause. To get out of this normal, hectic schedule that we live in, to spend time playing, to spend time resting, to spend time praying together. And if you're a parent, you have such a unique opportunity to model what a Sabbath could look like for your kids. You get to model for them what a healthy rhythm of work and rest looks like so that they don't just grow up embracing what culture tells them is normal. This fast-paced, life-sucking idol of overscheduled, overextended, stressed-out living. And the summer's a great time to begin to do this. Maybe your schedule's a little bit slower. Maybe baseball's slowing down for a little while. This is a great opportunity to establish healthy rhythms in your family, to begin to practice this. And Sabbath doesn't need to be complicated. In Hebrews, you know, the word that we translate as Sabbath simply meant to pause, to stop, to cease. And the key to practicing Sabbath is just to set aside some time where you're not going to do any work. Simply put, it's just a day to pause, to rest, to play, to pray, to reconnect. And the specifics of your Sabbath will look different from one family to another, from one person to another. And if the idea, maybe if it's new to you, I want you to spend some time with the people around you. Maybe it's your family or some friends that you connect with. And just spend some time just brainstorming what a Sabbath could look like for you, for your family, for your friend group, whatever it might be. And just try to incorporate one of those ideas into your day. Maybe one of your kids just wants to make pancakes on that morning when you guys are doing a Sabbath. Do it. Make some pancakes. Maybe it's going and picking berries at a farm. I don't know what it looks like for you, but spend some time brainstorming this together. You see, this idea of praying and playing, it's an act of worship. It's a day that you can set aside, these moments that you can pause and look at God and say, God, you've got this. You don't need me to help keep this world spinning. I can rest because you first modeled it for me. You see, your life has a rhythm. And whether you know it or not, your daily practices, your habits, they create these rhythms in your life. And your rhythm is the beat of your life. And it determines how you're ultimately going to live. My question for you is, your current rhythm intentional? Is your current rhythm of life balanced? Is your current rhythm of life even healthy? And Jesus, he invites each of us to learn his unforced rhythms of grace. And the problem is that life, it seems more and more stressed out. We live in this information age where life is coming at you faster than you can even handle. And it's as though the pressure to do more, to post more, to be more is stronger than our desire to live in the unforced rhythms of grace. And if you were honest with yourself, would you say that you're thriving, or would you say that you're just simply surviving right now? Does your life feel like it's full of meaning and depth? And if not, maybe it's time to slow down, to begin to learn these unforced rhythms. Maybe it's time to find your rhythm, to explore some healthy habits, and to commit to keeping some company with Jesus. I want to encourage you, over these next 167 hours, spend some time contemplating your current rhythms, your current pace of life. Write it down. List it out. And see if it matches up with where you want it to be. So over the next 167 hours, I hope that you will explore these healthy habits that can lead to rest and play. And one last thing, I want you to stand. We're going to close here in just a moment. One last thing. You see, when I've studied the life of Jesus, you know, Jesus looked like the kind of person who liked to have fun. You know, it's why we have fun here at Crosspoint. He, maybe more than any human being who ever lived, understood who he was. He was free to be himself, and he understood his relationship with his Father. And when the religious leaders, when they criticized John the Baptist, they did it because he was constantly saying no to the things that people enjoyed. He was too good. He was too upright. But on the opposite side of the scale, when they criticized Jesus, when the religious leaders called out Jesus, it was because he was hanging out with the partiers. He was hanging out with the rough around the edges crowd. He was hanging out with people who loved to have a good time, and they considered him, in our modern English language, to be a bit of a party animal. But Jesus was the kind of man who understood eternal and abundant life. Which brings me to one final note from the words of Jesus. He says this. He says, The thief approaches with malicious intent, looking to steal, looking to slaughter, looking to destroy. But Jesus says, I came to give life with joy and with abundance. And this life of abundance that Jesus is talking about is a life full of joy, a life full of fun. And maybe you've noticed that we like to have fun around here. We like to model that off of the fun that we see Jesus talking about, this life of abundance, hence the Prince song that you heard at the beginning. And so we're going to have a little bit of fun heading into this holiday weekend. We're going to sing one more song. I want you to wrap this up. So let's put our hands together. Let's sing this.